Opening a retail storefront is no joke. It's a whole lot of work and a completely different business model than selling products online or to the wholesale market. Brick and mortar retail requires different strategies, operational systems, and of course, staffing needs. And I know there are many of you listening who dream of someday opening a shop. In fact, we have many product brands that also have brick and mortar shops in our Proof to Product community. So today we're going to hear from Ginger Diaz, the owner of Feliz Modern and Rancho Diaz in San Antonio, Texas. Ginger Diaz came to retail to bring her favorite artists and makers' works to a wider audience. What started as one brick and mortar shop in San Antonio has expanded to a second shop as well as their online store at fleecemodern.com for those national customers that they service. All three shops are centered around products that bring joy and some cheeky fun to their customers. It's a small business full of hundreds of other small businesses and makers from around the globe. On today's episode, we're talking to Ginger about motivations for opening her stores, how relationships played a key role in their survival during the pandemic, and how Ginger's incredible staff has helped improve efficiencies in her business. We also talk a little bit about her buying preferences and red flags that she sees in manufacturers' pitches or outreach, and what she looks for when she's purchasing from smaller independent brands. Today's episode is brought to you by our Is Wholesale Right For You audio series. If you are sending out tons of wholesale pitches and you're not hearing back, I need you to listen to my free on-demand audio series. The problem is likely not your pitch. It is very likely that the problem is either your product line, your pricing, or your wholesale terms and conditions. But sometimes we're too close to it. We can't see what the issues are. And this audio series will run you through all the things you need to know to have a strong wholesale foundation. That is what is going to get your pitches open and the orders coming in. So get access to this free audio series at prooftoproduct.com/privatepod. That's prooftoproduct.com/privatepod. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. I'm on a mission to empower product-based business owners to confidently grow their revenue in their own way and at their own pace. Here at Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies, find inspiration, and action steps to help you start, streamline, and scale your product-based business. So grab your favorite notebook to take notes and let's get started. Hey, Ginger, welcome to Proof to Product.
Thanks for having me.
I am thrilled to chat with you. I recently had the opportunity to talk with you when you came to our Paper Camp program, and you were one of our guest speakers on our week when we talked to retailers, and you shared all about how you run your brick and mortar and how you want to work with brands. So I'm excited to continue that conversation and also tap into some of the unique things you've done with your brick and mortar shop to take you out of the day today. So we're going to cover all that today if you're okay with it.
Sure.
Awesome. Okay. So let's start out with, tell us about your stores. Where are they located and what types of products do you carry?
So our first store is Feliz Modern. It's in San Antonio, Texas, and it opened in 2017. And I co-own it with my husband, Mario. Mario and I are both artists. Our background is art. And we were looking for a way to bring more art to our city and to have something that we weren't currently seeing in our town. So we did that. We were total noobs, had no idea what we were doing. And we learned on the job. And then so that was 2017. 2 years later, or 1 year later, we opened our online store, FelizModern.com. And then 2 years later, we opened a second location in a historic district in downtown San Antonio called The Pearl. And then we almost like closed it all down during pandemic. And then a year after, I asked my landlord, can I get out of my lease? I asked them, can I have another space and open a third store?
So
you just never know how it's going to go. Yeah. It was like a year to the week that I said, I need to close up. Are y'all going to come after me for the lease or can I just close up? And they're like, no, we'll work with you.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What did your landlord say when you're like, okay, I wanted to close down and now I want more space? Were they just like,
the first conversation, I literally showed them my bank account, my spreadsheets and said, here's my reality. What would you like to do? Like, yeah. Here's how much cash I have. I could only make it one or two more months, or I close now and just have a sellout, or Can I get some help with the lease? And so they were able to give me some relief with my lease, some of it forgiven, and some of it was like amortized into future years of my lease. So thank God for that. And we came back strong once we were able to reopen. It was like everyone was just so excited to be back out shopping and being with family and friends. And then a year later, I had another concept for a different store called Rancho Diaz. And I asked the same landlord, since it's a pretty big project, pretty big location, can I have this empty space that's there and to put this new, very different concept from Feliz Modern?
Okay.
And I said yes.
I love this story because, one, it was a very scary time. And obviously you were having to make these tough decisions and have these tough conversations, and you didn't know what they were going to say, right? You didn't know if they were going to give you flexibility. But then to be able to flip it around and not only like, because you asked for accommodations and like, what can we do? You open this conversation for possibility, right? And I think that's something that a lot of people don't do. They think, okay, we're done. We're like, it's over.
I didn't ask for help or accommodations. I just said, are you going to sue me? Like, here's my financials. are you going to enforce this lease? You know, and I just wanted to know, like, what am I going to lose? Because I'm going to quit this lease. Commercial leases are very heavily favoring the landlord.
Yeah.
And my other store was my collateral for the lease. And so I was just scared that everything was going to get lost if I make this lease. And I just wanted to ask them. But I think the key importance or like lesson that I frankly learned from my dad in business was I had a relationship with my landlord where we were already team players.
Yeah.
You know, we were on the same team. We both wanted it to work. It's win-win if I do well and they do well.
Right.
So I already had that in the previous, I'd only been with them for 5 months before COVID hit. So it was kind of, we hadn't even gotten off the ground really on that location. But they were lovely and made it work. And thank goodness, because that gave me the runway to get back on track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and thank you for clarifying that too. I think just even being open to having these hard conversations though, can lead to better than expected outcomes, which is what happened in this case. And you're
totally,
the relationship is critical in all aspects of our business. So, thank you for sharing that story.
And it ended up being win-win because they didn't have a vacant store. There's no one signing a lease in the first year of COVID, you know?
Right.
So they didn't have a vacant store and I didn't have to go bankrupt and close the store. So it ended up being really great for both sides.
Oh, fantastic. I love hearing that. So you mentioned that you wanted to open the stores because you wanted to fill a need and you saw holes in the marketplace. Talk to me about those holes.
Well, we like to collect art. We like local artists, and we found that we could only find it really on weekends or if there happened to be an art fair, and it was hard to find that on a regular basis. And it was, if you didn't know where to look, you don't even know where to find it on the weekends. And we wanted to kind of mainstream the local art. And originally it was just going to be local artists. And a friend was saying, like, you have to have more to bring people in because they're not going to just come and need art on a Monday. They might need a candle and a birthday gift, but they don't need art on a Monday. And that was really great advice. So we started adding in other categories into the store, which really made it grow. But we really think that, like, our original thought was we want to be a gateway to art collecting, or no, it's a gateway drug to art collecting, where you can like get a little small piece for your home that's very original and it's not some poster from a big box store. And it's something that is meaningful to you and it's part of your hometown or your current town.
Yeah.
And then also it gives a way for the artist to be making money commission 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Instead of just like manning their booth and not being in the studio.
Yeah, for sure. I love that, the mission behind that. So talk to me about the different, what was the word you used? How do you differentiate the different stores and kind of what their themes or, you know, what they offer?
Well, it's funny that Feliz Modern originally started out with kind of both concepts in one, and it was not a good mix together. It was like, it was too, it didn't have a clean edit because it was all the parts of things I like. It was the super colorful, modern, fun, you know, sometimes trendy, although I hate that word, but just like super cute and everything my 8-year-old to my 46-year-old self wants. And then the other part that we had in the beginning was home decor, rugs, furniture, the handmade ceramics from Mexico. And those didn't really fit with the art that we were carrying and the other products we were carrying. So we slowly shifted to make this the Feliz brand a cleaner edit. And once we did that, I still had that desire to still have the home decor that I was wanting to find locally. So a few years later, that is now Rancho Diaz. It's like the more grown-up version of Feliz Modern, although I'm a grown-up and I still like all the colors and everything of Feliz Modern.
Totally, totally. I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, when I'm a grown-up, what do I want to be? And they're like, you are a grown-up. I'm like, no, not yet. So... okay, this is great. So again, I know I mentioned this already, but when you spoke at Paper Camp recently, you shared really great insights with everyone about your buying preferences and what you look for when you're searching for new products for your store. And I would love for you to touch briefly here on this episode. What are some of the things that you look for when you're buying from smaller independent brands? And then maybe in contrast, what are some of the red flags that might prevent you from actually following through with a purchase?
Yeah, it's something we had to really learn over time. So in the beginning, we would find an artist that we loved and just like, we want to carry your ceramics or your prints or anything in the store. And we learned that artists a lot of them are not trained on how to keep up with retail demand, or their type of art can't keep up with retail demand, which is also okay. You know, it's just not fit for that. Right. But what we try to do is work with artists that if we can work out a way that it can meet retail demand, that will let you have a more sustainable life as a working artist, and it doesn't cheapen your brand. And I'll give you the example. Thank God, Kelly O'Connor is a huge artist here in San Antonio in Texas, and actually she's got pieces in New York and Europe, and she's this person that does these huge collage. I'm like 4x8 huge collages, murals in the museums here. So they're very unattainable for me at the time. I'm still actually, and for most people, and they're, you know, they're thousands of dollars. Right. But I love her work. And so when we were starting, I asked her, like, would you be willing to make some of your collages as reproducible prints at a lower cost? And she's so innovative and forward thinking that she said yes. Other people would not say yes to that because they feel like it'll cheapen their fine art sales if they are more accessible. But that's the key word, I think, is she decided to be accessible to a broader audience, which has only boosted her fine art career.
Yeah.
And she's been an artist with us ever since. So every year she releases a new print with us. And she's able to quit her full-time job. She now has income coming in from the store and can just focus in on the art and let us be the ones that are selling her reproductions and then let the art gallery sell her originals.
I love that because you helped. Well, one, it's a benefit to your business, right? You have this exclusive print that's just for y'all, I assume. And yeah. Then two, you're helping her diversify her revenue streams without competing with her main core art, you know, her art sales. And so I love that. That was a collaboration too.
And I want to say it was really the leap of faith was on her side and on ours. Like we knew it would benefit the store to have something that everyone wants and can't afford in its original side, or its original state. But I just love that Kelly saw the vision for that and wanted to be more democratic and having art be available to people who can't spend thousands and thousands of dollars.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. So you do carry a lot of products from our community in your store. You know, we have people that sell stationery and gift and home decor and all sorts of things. And I know that they love working with you. I know there's also a lot of people that pitch you day in and day out to become a brand in your store. Let's talk about that contrast side that I started to mention. What are some of the red flags that might put you off when someone pitches you, or if you see something on their fair site or their, like, are there things that will make you pause or that create friction that then you won't necessarily move forward with an order?
I would say like 95% have no red flags. It's just, even if I like the product, it's not the right time or fit for our store.
That's good.
So there's things that I would buy for my home. I would buy from that artist that's pitching me, but we might already have something in the store that's too similar, or we just had something that was kind of in the same vein, or we already have enough prints and we can't add more. There's so many variables, and that's what we try to communicate to people who apply, is that a no does not mean we don't like you, or you're not good enough to buy. And it's sometimes it's the opposite. I mean, sometimes they're too high in for this store. You know, we want to keep Feliz more affordable. So there's so many variables, and I hope makers really understand that no's should not be a deterrent to keep applying to other stores, or even come back in a year and apply again to that store and see if now we do have the shelf space or the right edit for that. I would say red flags would be if they don't know the wholesale side of the business and they don't know what they have to be able to make it for to sell it to a retailer. That's the part where a lot of people just don't have yet the experience to know like how to create a line sheet, how to call, you know, bring up their terms. I don't think your people have that problem since they're getting that education from you. But for a lot of people, it's a very big barrier. And the other thing that's really we can talk to them about pricing and all of that, but the biggest barrier is if it's not easy for us to order or reorder, it's just not going to happen very often.
Yeah.
And because the retail, the margins are so low, the speed is so fast, you know, the volume goes really fast. So if they can't have something, if their type of art, or if they don't have the right printer or reproduction company to make their things quickly and efficiently at a price that works, they're not going to be able to keep up with the demand. Mm-hmm. You know, that's more of like art weekend or every month art sale kind of demand, which is great. You know, that works for originals. But if you're going to be in a retail store, the volume has to be easy. And we don't want to spend this time shooting and marketing a piece that we only have 20 of, and then the person can't give us 20 more as soon as they sell out, you know, because we want to keep that momentum going for not just for us, but for them. Absolutely. So that's something that is, the ones we take in, we try to talk about how you can do that. Here's a printer that works for this artist. Here's someone that does ceramics. Try to get enough going to where also where you're not packaging all your own things. You need to get help, because your time is best spent running your business and making your art.
Oh, yes. I'm jotting down that as a timestamp so that we quote that out, because our time is best spent on the creation part of our business, the creative. And frankly, most of the people I work with, I mean, I've worked with thousands of brands at this point, and all of them got into this because they wanted to create the art. They wanted to create the work that they create. And then they get bogged down with the business. That's not their strength. That's not their skill. It stresses them out, understandably so. But it also, like, that's where we need to look at what kind of help can we bring in and how can we do that, which actually I want to kind of lean the conversation into that now. You have done, I mean, you have 3 locations, you have a team that works for you, and you have done a really remarkable job. And I know it's a work in progress, as you will soon say, but like, you have done an incredible job, and I need to give you kudos for removing yourself from some of the day-to-day operations of these retail shops. So can you talk a little bit about how you started this transition and how it's going so far?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, of course, in the beginning, my husband and I are doing every part of everything. I think we had only one and a half people on payroll.
Yeah.
And that was scary enough to even do those 2. And we didn't have a long runway of funds and savings to take off. So I was really in the business, 7 days a week in crazy hours. And my kids started resenting the business that first year. It was really hard to get it off the ground because you have to wear every hat. And as it goes, it's such a momentum and a fast pace. Like, we're open 7 days a week. There's no time to like sit back and think, do I have the right systems? Are the right people in the right seats? Am I doing things that are not worth my time, and I could actually hire somebody and then do what I'm better at, and let them do what they're better at.
Yeah.
It's going so fast that it took me like a couple of years to even see it. And it really was from feedback from my staff that was saying, you know, I know you're out here on the floor helping us, but we would prefer that you focus on marketing and product sourcing and finding the new artists, because that's something that we're not going to do. So you need to do the things that are unique to you. Whereas I thought, I'm being a team player. I'm out here on the sales floor with them. And they really gave me that feedback of, for us to like move and keep the pace, let's all, you know, stay in our, like, have lanes. And it was great feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think to your point, everyone listening is probably shaking their head yes alongside of you of like, yes, I wear every hat in this business, or at some point I did wear every hat in this business. And I think one of the things that people struggle with most is how do I decide what these lanes are and which ones I should keep versus which ones I should pass off and delegate or outsource to someone else, right?
I mean, so, I'm still figuring that out.
Me too. Or it changes too. It changes with our, you know, the goals of our business, what we're trying to achieve, the outcomes we want. Also, the other thing is I'm a huge advocate for hiring people that are smarter than me or better than me in certain areas that bring something new to the table, a new perspective that we might, you know, a blind spot that I might have. Do you feel that same way?
Oh, 100%. And we also hire a lot of artists. And I think that if you're an artist, and a lot of our employees have their own art outside of Feliz that they do on their days off, but we also sell a lot of their art in our store. But I think that artists know how to juggle. They have to have different lanes, you know, in their brain. Like they know they have to have their day job that's supporting them, and they do their art, you know, and so they know how to juggle and still push things forward, and they're creative thinkers. So sometimes we might have started doing an internal process a certain way because that's how I knew from previous jobs. And then someone might come in and say, like, why are you doing it this way? This would be a much more efficient way to do it. Why are we have two hands touching this process instead of just one? So we've gotten a ton of feedback, and that's something we talk a lot about during our onboarding, especially with managers, is you're brand new and you're coming in with stuff that we don't know, and you're seeing our process from as an outsider, and we would love for you to tell us what makes no sense to you as you come in. And we've learned a lot. We used to have a lot more convoluted process in areas than we do now.
Yeah. I love hearing that, because I kind of do the same of like, okay, you're coming in with fresh eyes. You're working through these SOPs and systems that we put into place. Tell me what's not, like, tell me what seems crazy to you. Because the other thing is too, and I don't know if you've experienced this, I am removed from portions of the business now that I used to have my hands very much on. And so I don't want people coming in and just following the checklist. And if the checklist is inefficient, I want us to fix it, you know, and just because we set something up in the past may not mean that it's the best path forward now. And so having the open lines of communication too, do you do regular team meetings with your staff?
We do. We used to do all team when we were all in one location. And now we just do the leadership team once a month since we're in three different stores.
Nice. Mm-hmm. What do you think has been the biggest point of relief? Like, is there a certain system or process or even a tool that you use that has made empowering your team and like getting yourself out of the day to day a little easier?
I've never liked micromanaging, but I found that I was in a way, and it was part of that thought that like, if they're here, I should be there. If they're doing this task, like if they're unboxing boxes, I should be part of that too, because I don't want it to be like, you go do this and I'm over here. And part of it was seeing that, I think it was when I went, either I was sick or I had to go out of town for something, and I came back and everything was running just fine without me. And in fact, in some ways better, because I wasn't getting in the way. And I was like, oh, wow, they got this. And I need to like keep that going. And so sometimes I know it's hard as entrepreneurs, especially to take vacation. This was not even a vacation. It was just like an unexpected, can't be here. And it taught me like every time I'm away, of course, not for too long, but they improvise in ways that, you know, they're very entrepreneurial in their own way, and they can look and make it more efficient.
Yeah.
So I would say that as far as actual tools, we use Trello a lot to communicate, lists of projects. We use Slack, of course, to communicate as teams. We're on Shopify, which we've tried Square. We were Square in the beginning. We went to Shopify. We thought we could go back to Square when we opened the new store, and it was a disaster. Square, I think, is better if you're running an in-person only business. Mm. It's much better on the POS. It's much more simple to operate, but the online portion is very hard to run in Square in the way we do it.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. That would be my advice. If I could go back to day one and just had started with one POS and not spend so much money and time on the different transitions, I would have saved myself a lot of gray hair.
Oh, I bet. It's funny. I was actually going to, that was going to be my next question of like, hey, if you could go back in time to when you're opening your first shop, what would it be? And it sounds like just simplifying the tech, simplifying the systems, kind of pulling yourself out of the business sooner, maybe, if I'm hearing you correctly. Is that
totally? I mean, part of that is some, it's yes, it would have been nice, but we did not have the budget to pull myself out of the business. It's just reality. And I mean, in the beginning, I read, you know, some articles about how to structure things. I mean, very little, very little. I went in just, I kind of just jump in feet first and figure it out. And then I kind of learn along the way.
Yeah, me too.
But it's the only way my brain works. My husband's the one that as soon as we buy something, he reads the instruction manual. I'm like, oh, what a drag. Like,
let's get started putting this together. Let's go. Yeah,
like, let's just go see what fits, you know, and sometimes my way works better and sometimes this way works better. So you just got to do whatever motivates you and keeps you going. But yeah, if I could, I mean, obviously opening the new Rancho Dios was easier than opening Feliz because we already knew a lot more than we did when we opened Feliz, but we're still figuring things out.
Yeah. Well, and to going back to what we mentioned earlier, like we're still figuring things out, but also our goals change a little bit. Maybe how we want to structure things changes a little bit, how much time we want. Like being an entrepreneur means that we have endless opportunities, which is awesome. But at the same time, it can be also very overwhelming because
double-edged sword.
Exactly. Yeah. And we know that we started this business to, you know, make an impact in our community, of course, and, you know, make a healthy living so that we can live a good life. But really, it does boil down to what kind of life do we want to lead? Do we want to be in the store 7 days a week? Do we want to, you know, can we get to the point where we have steady revenue so that we can hire help so that we don't have to be in the store 7 days a week, you know? And I'm sure that was a tough transition for you along the way.
Yes. I mean, there's months where I'm actually able to take 2 days off a week. And then there's months where I might get a half day or 1 day, just depending on what's going on and what staffing changes or product changes or what, you know, season. So it's definitely, you definitely can get to a place where you have kind of a 9-to-5, but not every week, not even every month. And it's, the older I get, the more I try to look at what do I want my Sunday to look like? What do I want my Monday to look like? What do I want my weekend to look like? What availability do I want for my family?
Yeah.
And then, cause there's a lot of opportunities that, like you mentioned, being an entrepreneur, like you have more ideas than time.
Yeah.
You have more ideas than money. Same with artists. They have more creativity than time or money or the right system to make it happen. And that's a kind of a curse and a blessing, like, right, you know, ideas are easy to create, but there was a period where I was just like wanting to do everything that I thought of, and I was going to run myself into the ground. And so figuring that out is hard.
Figuring that out is so hard. Also, I didn't mean to chuckle. I wasn't laughing at you. I'm laughing because that resonates so much with myself. And I'm sure many of our listeners have, I have way too many ideas than I have capacity to do.
Ideas are not the problem.
Right. It's capacity, time, and like the execution on the ideas.
Yes.
And I think too, that's where as creative entrepreneurs, we do, whether we're running a brick and mortar, whether we're running a coaching business, whether it's our listeners that manufacture products, like that's where we constantly have to be prioritizing and reprioritizing and checking ourselves and making sure, wait, am I working on the things that are pushing me towards my goals and my priorities? You know, because it's easy to get that shiny object syndrome of like, ooh, I'm really excited about this. Let me head down that road.
Yeah. Yeah. It's learning the discipline to finish what you've started or keep maintaining what you've started until you have time to start something else. I'm not the poster child for it. But I'm working at it.
Totally. Well, I think it's just good for all of us to hear that we're all kind of in the same boat too, you know? So
one of our employees is a very prolific creator of products on her own on the side. And she was working 5 days a week with us. She's in senior management with us and then doing her business totally on the weekends or in the evenings. And it was exhausting. And she said, can I shift my hours to 4 days a week and then use that Friday for my business? And I said, yes. And then she was using her Friday for a business. But if she's just shipping out orders and packaging them on Friday, when is she creating? So again, she still doesn't have her weekend.
Yeah.
And so she hired someone to work for her on Friday that is there in the studio with her, shipping, you know, completing the orders, doing all the tasks that she doesn't need to do that anyone can come in and help her with. Not, you know, anyone, but like a talented, reliable right. person. And she was then able to create so many more products and grow her business so much faster by taking that little dip in profit by hiring somebody mm-hmm. and going, you know.
Right. The dip was temporary.
But mm-hmm. it's scary when you don't have a big buffer. Yes. It's so scary. And it's not always the right time to do it. I don't want to advocate that you know, labor is one of the things that I have to really watch on our costs, because yeah. we want to pay everybody a livable wage. We have insurance for our management team. It's something that is very expensive. And you want to not hire too fast or too many and then have to let people go. Right. So it's something that we're always trying to manage. And as far as you're asking, like, what do I delegate? What do I not? It really sometimes depends on who do you have in your basket right now? Like, who do you have available and what are their skills? Mm-hmm. And the more people that come in and I learn, oh, they're really good at images or photos or, you know, so then I can farm off different parts to those people. But sometimes things come back on my lap. So I just yeah. have to like be flexible.
I think agility is the key word in entrepreneurship, yes. right? Like we have yeah. to, but I love what you're talking about too, of leveraging the strengths and skills and experiences of your team members in different ways, because that also gives them an opportunity to shine outside of their basic responsibilities and roles and to, you know, gives them empowerment and ownership over things that are happening in the business.
And lets them enjoy their job more, you know, like mm-hmm. who wants to be a monkey doing the same thing over and over? Like I want to mm-hmm. have variety and I want to have decisions in what I do. And I want to be able to propose ideas. And I think we're all like that.
I agree. Ginger, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your insights with us today. Let people know where they can find you online and where they can shop both in person and online from you.
So Feliz Modern is felizmodern.com if you're not in San Antonio. If you're in San Antonio, we have our flagship in Olmos Park. And then we have our other one in the historic Pearl. And then Rancho Diaz is ranchodiaz.com. And it's at the historic Pearl as well. And then the main place we interact with our community is Instagram. So if you can search Feliz Modern or Rancho Diaz, you'll find us.
Fantastic. We'll include all that in the show notes for our listeners. Sure. Ginger, thank you again for your time. And
thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Really.
Of course. No, it's always wonderful. And again, I told you this before we started recording, but you recently, when you spoke at Paper Camp, our students loved hearing from you and the advice you provided and the empathy and compassion that you provided in the process was just wonderful. So I thank you for all your contributions to our community and for helping to, you know, educate and support our community members as well.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Oh man, what Ginger said about having so many ideas and no time really resonated with me. And I have a feeling that it resonated with all of you too. This is just a gentle reminder to all of us to pace ourselves and to prioritize the things that really push us towards the outcomes that we're trying to achieve. Some of you listening might be working towards freedom and flexibility of your time and schedule. Others may want higher consistent revenue. Some may be working on launching their very first product. Whatever your area of focus is, remember to stay the path and tackle one thing at a time. Huge thanks to Ginger for joining me today. We haven't finalized the details yet, but I want to let you in that she's probably going to join us for the 42nd round of Paper Camp on our retailer panel again. So if you're in that group, you'll be able to hear her talk about her buying preferences. That conversation was amazing when she joined us for the 41st round. She shared how she likes to be pitched, how much follow-up is too much, and she answered a slew of questions from our Paper Camp students. One of the perks of Paper Camp are our weekly live coaching calls where you get to ask your burning questions to established manufacturers, to sales reps, to shop owners, and of course, I'm there too answering your questions. But hearing from people who have walked the same path or even someone that could be your customer down the road, it's really empowering and it will help you avoid mistakes as you scale up wholesale. So the 42nd round of Paper Camp will take place this fall. Head to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp to get on the wait list. This is a 4-week intensive coaching program focused explicitly on selling wholesale. So if you want to see your products lining the shelves of your favorite stores, big and small, you want to go get your booty in Paper Camp. We do sell out every round. This is the 42nd round. So get on that wait list and it'll give you early access to enroll. So again, that's prooftoproduct.com/papercamp. Thanks so much for listening today. I'll be back next week with a new episode.